I have abandoned some, and have gained newer ones. But, again, let me distinctly declare, for fear I should be misunderstood, should be charged with again going round the subject, and evading the point at issue, Ayo, has the Negro an immortal soul? Yes, he has, emphatically. I know it, because I see him here in my life. I know it, because I come into spiritual rapport with him at almost every step I take. I labored hard to benefit him here in this life, and I still continue my labors in that you call the spirit life. God grant that I may long labor in that vineyard, for there is need of it. By Theodore Parker, October 25, 1869. Question. Is it not true that highly cultivated men and women, departed from earth life, rarely find either pleasure or duty in returning to communicate with us? And when they do so, it is a kind of self-denying, missionary spirit that prompts them so to do, and by consequence, our communications through ordinary mediums seem ordinarily of a low intellectual order, sometimes low in morals and good taste. Answer. No, it is not true, in any one sense. It is absolutely untrue. Those who have passed from this earthly life long ages ago, who stand high in the spheres, whose brows are crowned with wisdom, and love, and power, are they who find their highest heaven, it may be, in returning to earth and preaching to you spirits who are in darkness, to you souls who are still present in mortal, to you who can scarcely peer beyond the veil and believe even in the future life. They come to keep alive that belief, to inspire you with faith, to give you in your inner life, at least, faint glimpses of the promised land. If it was not for their coming, the doors of your inner spiritual life would be securely closed. You receive their light, if any light at all, concerning the future state. You would all be in doubt. They come to you when you know it not, they minister to your spiritual needs. They strengthen your faith. The old earth home is still bright to them, and however great may be the difficulties they labor under in returning, they are glad to war against them, they are glad to find their feet pierced with thorns on returning, they are glad to mingle again with earthly scenes, that they may lead you up to the plane where you can at least have faith in another life, and a strong hope that that other life will be better than this. Question. Have spirits the same name in heaven that they had on earth? Answer. Not always. Sometimes it is so, but generally it is otherwise. Question. How, then, can we know if they are the persons we inquire for? Answer. On returning here it is expected that they give the names by which they were known on earth. Question. Always? Answer. Always. Question. What should I believe if a child on coming back said she was my daughter, and still called herself by another name, one that I never heard? Answer. If such a child had an earthly name, you should persevere in demanding that name. It is your right. In all probability, the child does not know it. In its experience as a spirit, it may have lost that earthly name, but there are others who can give it information. Persist in your efforts to obtain it, and, in all probability, you will at last succeed. It is your right to have it. This was at page 338. Question. Will other spirits call that child by the name it had here on earth? Answer. No, not necessarily, but they know, someone doubtless does in the spirit world, what name it had here, what name you will know it by. Question. Do the evil deeds we commit here come to the memory in the spirit life, and disturb our happiness? Answer. They do, most assuredly, and that disturbance is more keen than it could by any possibility be here. Question. Is there any limit to the continuance of their unhappiness? Answer. There is, but no general limit. When the soul has outlived the conditions that produced the mistake here, then the remorse will pass away. Evil is transient, and must pass away, while goodness is permanent, and must ever remain. By William E. Channing, October 26, 1869. Question. Does the use of tobacco injure the spirit, or spirit body, in spirit life, and does it prevent the development of medium powers? Answer. There can come no permanent injury to the spirit. All such that may seem to be injuries inflicted upon the spirit are but shadows that transiently fall upon it. Tobacco is one of those subtle poisons that prevent the soul, or mind, from giving a natural expression through the body. It so paralyzes the senses or keys of mortal being upon which the spirit plays in expressing itself in outer life, that it is impossible to use them naturally and perfectly. But as I before remarked, all the injury that it can do to the spirit is but transient. It can leave no permanent scar, though the effect will be carried with the spirit to its future home, to that other life, which belongs to it as a spirit, but as the sun of the natural and divine love is shed upon it, these clouds will pass away, and you will see that the spirit is pure, untainted, and carries no scar. You ask, does it prevent the development of mediumship? No, it does not, but it does affect mediumship. We have the case of a medium, Mr. Foster, in mind. Those who know him best, know that he is an inveterate smoker, makes large use of the poison, tobacco. And this, what may be called an evil, is permitted, excused, suffered to be, by his controlling foreign spirits, those who come to him from time to time, to bear messages to their loved ones here. You may ask why. I answer, because in a strictly normal state he would be very hard to use as a medium. The power would be there. His mediumship, as such, would be just as well developed and unfolded as it is now, but those spirits who come to him to use those powers could not so readily use them, and so they are willing to come, even through a cloud of tobacco smoke, which, I assure you, is very offensive to them, that they may come to those who remain here and are in need of good, those who are in the shadow and in need of light. They make sacrifices for you which, I am quite sure, you would be hardly willing to make for them. They lay aside all the loveliness and the pleasure of their beautiful homes beyond the river of death that they may serve you. They come, they are your most humble servants, they teach you, as best they may, they answer your calls, they cheer you in your sadness, they assure you of another life, they give you a hope beyond mortality, a solid reality that there is a better world than this, a condition of being where you will be freed from many of the oppressions that hang about you here in your mortal life. Question. Are the privileges for acquiring the natural sciences as good in the spirit life as here? Answer. When they relate especially to the things which can be recognized and measured and analyzed by your physical, mortal senses, then it is harder to become acquainted with sciences, but when not especially related to the things of this life, but more intimately related to the spirit, then they have advantages far above you. Those who have made a certain branch of science their study here, who have mastered it, have laid for themselves an ample foundation to carry on or build a structure of beauty and power and strength in the other world. For instance, the geologist, who has mastered the science of geology, as relating to this life, goes to the spirit world with the foundation well laid. He can go to work at once and rear a spiritual structure without any difficulty. There is not the impediment of poverty to hinder him, he has no sickness to contend with there. He can travel as he pleases. He finds teachers at every turn in life, those who know more about the subject than he does. He has but to ask, and he receives. There are schools of science in our life which are far beyond your conception. You are in the alphabet of science, even as it relates to the things of this life, as yet. You know very little concerning your surroundings. The geologist cannot go very far down into the earth. To a certain distance he can go, beyond that it is all speculation. When you consider that all that is in this life that you can recognize, everything that the earth contains upon its surface and under its surface, everything that the air contains, and all that is in the sea, all these have a spiritual existence as well as a material, and that the spiritual is capable of being analyzed, challenges the science of their spirit world to analyze it, When you consider that, you will not wonder that I tell you that the science of life in the spirit world is far beyond your human conception. By Theodore Parker, October 28, 1869. Question. Is it not a misfortune, and detrimental to one's happiness and harmonious progress, to be a spiritualist, philanthropist, or reformer, if he be poor, without the means and influence to correct the many disorders of society, and when the current of popular follies are too strong, rendering his efforts vain, and often carrying the reformer with them against his will? Answer. So far as the things of this life are concerned, it is a misfortune, and a terrible one, because the philanthropic soul is constantly warring against that which he cannot overcome, and the hard conditions of fate are continually beating upon the soul. But there is another life than this, and he who was a reformer here, a good man or woman here, will carry that goodness with them to that other life. Then it is that all these difficulties, poverty, sickness, various inabilities that present themselves from day to day, will disappear. The highway will be open, and there will be no bridges over which the soul must pass where there are fees charged. Everything will be free, and the benevolent soul can outlive his benevolent desires, and carry on that which he could not hear. That which was a misfortune here will constitute his highest heaven there. So cherish it, though it bring you thorns here, hold it close to your hearts, and never let it go, carry it with you. It will be a passport that will admit you to a high heaven hereafter. Question. Are we not endowed by our Creator with passions and appetites for legitimate and holy uses, and, therefore, is it not wrong to be constantly decrying and denying the animal propensities, instead of controlling and directing them in their uses, as God evidently designed? Answer. All the lower functions of our human lives belong exclusively to the things of this world, to the needs of physical life, of body and sense, and therefore they should be kept under proper subjection to higher ends, in subjection, if you please, to the moral law, to those functions of our nature that are preeminent above these animal functions. The use of them is good, very good. That is rendering unto the things of this life what is due to them. But the abuse of them not only makes misery for you in this life, but so arrays your spirit in darkness in the other life, for a time at least, that it would hardly be well to allow them too much freedom. They were given each and all of us by the same power that gave us our moral faculties, our reason, and we should always allow reason, the highest light of our nature, the divinest wisdom we possess, to guide and direct in all the lower needs that pertain to our lives. Ignoring nothing, but directing, guiding, and giving each its proper place, a proper use and proper time. It is a great thing to know how to govern one's lower self. It is a divine thing, and when we shall all know how to do it, we shall become gods in wisdom, in morality, in all that constitutes gods. By Theodore Parker, November 1, 1869. Question. In a recent number of the Banner, the spirits say this is the most perilous period of the world's history. I ask, do they refer to volcanic action, or to the action of human governments, as they affect the welfare of man? Answer. Their reference in that respect is general, refers to your spiritual and material, to the vital changes that you are passing through at this time. And as you are passing through changes, so is the earth. You have reached, religiously, politically, physically, and spiritually, a certain point, which will develop, as you pass beyond it, very great changes, which will reveal to you, as mortals and spirits, that which has never been revealed to you before. The earth and its products have been steadily rising in the scale of being till the present, and that present is pregnant with great changes. Marked changes are taking place amongst you today. Those still more marked are to come. The established religions of the world are about to be swept away, and the fine gold of good that there is in them is to be revealed. Those which have enough to perpetuate themselves in the future will do so, those which have not will become extinct. At certain periods or cycles in the world's history, great changes have taken place. It always has been so, It always, doubtless, will be so. As the earth has grown older, and man has become more mature, and the spirit has gathered to itself elements through which it can more perfectly express itself, you must expect that the changes that are upon you will be greater than all those that have preceded this time in the world's history. Question. Is there such a thing as sex of the soul, independent of sex of the body, and if so, does it ever happen that male souls are incarnated in female physical forms, and vice versa? Answer. The positive and negative forces of life, the male and female forces of life, are everywhere distinct in themselves until they reach such a high spiritual altitude that they are merged in one. It is then that the male and female become one in spirit, acting in divine harmony with the God Spirit. They are then, to all intents and purposes, gods, male and female. In this sense, the male becomes the female, and the female the male, but in no other sense. Question. Will the time ever come in their spirit life when such souls shall assume a spirit form appropriate, in outward seeming, to their true sex? Answer. Yes, a law, divine and human, is constantly outworking itself through form, for the perfection of form, for the highest revealment of the God life, and what may be expected for one, namely, perfection, may be expected for all. By William E. Channing, November 9, 1869. Question. Are the persons in the world who really desire and strive to reform, and yet are unable, from circumstances and predisposition? Answer. Certainly, we see such exhibitions almost every day. Circumstances over which we, as humans, have no control oftentimes environ us so that we cannot escape. We must obey their behest, whether we will or no. Certain conditions, forces antenatal, are very rigid in their requirements. They lead us, as servants. They are our masters. And yet it is the soul's business to always war against everything that tends to retard its flight upward. No matter whether it can overcome the thing or not, it is its business to war with it, and it always will. Question. There are two kinds of spiritualists. The first are those considerably devoted to natural science, know something of the principles of logic, and see nothing at all inconsistent or contrary to the laws of nature in the idea of the communion of spirits in the body with those out of the body. These are constantly on the alert. To have given to them some conclusive demonstrative proof, according to those natural laws, of their faith, but being very exacting, they seem generally to fail in obtaining that satisfaction. The other class seem to have no difficulty at all in satisfying their minds, although they have little knowledge of any kind, and no predisposition from reason in favor of spirit communion. These last have abundant evidences, while the former find them much scarcer than angel visits. Now, the question is, had not the former class better withdraw altogether from the search, and leave the field to the babes and sucklings? Answer. That would be very much like mature age abandoning the field of science to youth and babies. It is this first class that does the hard work in spiritualism, for, while they are oftener unsuccessful than they are successful, when they do chance to have success, it is generally in the right quarter. It is generally well balanced. It is generally well proven by facts in science that cannot be mistaken, while the other class, who require but little, and consequently search but little, go hardly beyond the surface. They only give you surface ideas, and only receive surface ideas, while the deep thinker, the clear reasoner, one who demands the most perfect tests in this matter, are those who do the cause the most good. Retire? No, your spiritualism would die without them. By Cardinal Chevreuse, November 23, 1869. Question. We suffer here for the sins of our parents in the physical, mental, and spiritual parts of our nature. Do these predispositions follow us into the spiritual world, and are they there, also, a source of enmity, annoyance, and discomfort to us? Answer. It is written that the sins of the fathers are visited upon the third and fourth generations, and we may go to still greater lengths, all physical sin, or that evil or disease which is the result of physical mistakes, does not follow the spirit past the boundaries of human life, it belongs to the body, therefore falls when the body falls. But all that which you call sin, which had its rise in the mental, will be carried by the thinking spirit to the spirit world. It belongs to the thought kingdom of the individual, and to the kingdom of the spirit, therefore it lives after death. Question. Is it wrong to lie, in reply to a designing question intended to interrupt us by admission, or convey the required impression or information by silence? Are lies such by virtue of the motive that prompted it? It is not always the highest wisdom to speak what you consider to be absolute truth. It is sometimes wise to conceal that which is asked for. When an answer is given to any question in the negative that truth would decide should be given in the affirmative, the evil, or that which you call the lie, would consist in the motive. If that was good, then there could be no evil, and if it were not good, then it would give birth to a child or thought corresponding with itself. By Theodore Parker, November 30, 1869. Question. There is ample scope for the exercise of all our faculties in spirit life, so we are told, but is the scope for the exercise of the craft of the politician, the malice and control of the tyrant, and the ambition of a Xerxes or Napoleon? Answer. Yes, there is liberty in all those several directions, but here, in the spirit world, spirits are very soon educated to know that whenever they injure another, they injure themselves correspondingly. Whatever they do that is detrimental to the happiness of another, is correspondingly detrimental to their happiness. So they very soon learn to be careful in all their doings towards their fellow creatures. Question. Does this result immediately? Answer. Very soon, for education begins at birth there, as physical education begins at physical birth here. Question. Does the law of might makes right prevail to any extent in spirit life? Answer. The law of right is better understood in the spirit world than here, and spirits are more desirous of acting under the rule of the law of right than under the rule of the law of might, for they are never safe there. It may turn and rend them at any moment. Question. Is not the faculty of secretiveness a form of selfishness? Answer. No, it may be very nearly related to selfishness, but is by no means a form of selfishness. Question. Is life in the spirit world a continual strife, turmoil, and self-defense, as in the earth life? Answer. For a time it is, till the spirit has outgrown earthly propensities, outlived them, gone beyond them. Question. Shall we, who have been born into this earth life, ever find another home than this sphere? Answer. It is quite certain that your strongest attractions will be here, so you may infer that your home will be here. Question. Where are spirits located after they have thrown off the mortal body? Answer. Anywhere and everywhere. Wherever there is life, there is the spirit world, the spirits dwell. Question. Do we ever outgrow our attractions for this earth home? This was at page 348. Answer. So far as this material life is concerned, you will outgrow them, but there are spiritual attractions that it is hard to go beyond. Question. Do spirits who have passed away within a year or two have power to communicate with those who passed away thousands of years ago? Answer. They have. Question. Why is it that some can see spirits while in their mortal bodies, and others cannot? Answer. Some are so chemically organized, that, under certain chemical conditions, they can see spirits, or the clothing that covers the spirit, not the spirit. It is simply a chemical difference that exists between human bodies. Question. Is that clothing made up of chemical particles of matter? Answer. Yes, it is. Question. Is the spirit itself matter? Answer. So etherealized as not to be, under any circumstances, apparent to human senses. Question. Can this spirit body be seen with our natural eyes, or in a different way? Answer. No man, woman, or child hath ever seen a spirit at any time, or under any circumstances. They have only seen the outer covering of the spirit. Question. Is that seen with the natural eyes? Answer. Sometimes with the natural eye, sometimes with the clairvoyant eye, or second, inner, sight. Question. Some assume that they converse with spirits. Is that done orally? Answer. Sometimes, but oftener mentally. Question. Sacred history records the communion of Saul with the woman of Indah. Was she like the mediums of the present day? 349 Answer. Yes, precisely the same. The woman of Indah, who called up the spirit of Samuel, was a medium, such as you have amongst you at the present day. Question. By what process does the spirit change its locality? Answer. It exercises its will, which becomes the vehicle to convey it from one point to another. The spirit glides through the air as light or sound passes through the atmosphere. Question. Does it take its spirit body along? Answer. Certainly it does, for without that it could not express itself, the spirit could give no expression without matter. Question. Can our departed friends return and aid us in any way? Answer. That is a self-evident fact, at least, a fact to myself. They can return, can aid you in all the various avocations of this life. By Theodore Parker, December 6, 1869. Question. Does each one of us have a guardian spirit? Answer. In all probability each one of you have many, since it is to be expected that you have each one, perhaps more than one, friend in the spirit world, who is anxious for your welfare, who would be true to you, desiring to do you good. Question. How can we know? Answer. You may never know while here in the body. Question. Do they watch over us for our good? Answer. If they love you and are your friends, they certainly will watch over you for your good. 9. Will they direct us in the right way? Answer. So far as they are able to, but their power is finite, like your own. Question. Can spirits who lived 2,000 years ago come back to Earth and see the advancement in science? Answer. Yes, there are many who return communicating with you, who have been away thousands of years. Question. Can they see the progress that has been made in science? Answer. Sometimes they do. It depends very much upon how much they are interested in those things. Question. Are our guardian spirits necessarily our earthly relatives? Answer. Oh, no, anyone who finds profit or pleasure in your mental or spiritual sphere may become your guardian spirit. Question. Are they supposed to be with us continually, or only occasionally? Answer. They are not always with you. Question. How do we know when they are? Answer. You may not always know, unless you are susceptible to spirit influence. Then you will be very likely to know. Question. Must we not be very yielding to spirit influence in order to know? Answer. Yes, you should be negative, passive, ready to receive whatever good may be ready to come to you. Question. Are any spirits so low that they cannot communicate with their friends? Answer. Yes. There are many who are so low they have no special desire to communicate with their friends, and therefore do not. Question. What hour is best adapted to communing with unseen intelligences? Answer. The hour that you are the most quiet, most free from earthly annoyances, whether it be by day or night, it matters not. Question. When we first become unconscious in this world, do we at that moment wake to consciousness in the spirit world? Answer. Not always. Sometimes souls remain unconscious for years, for centuries. Question. Why is it? Answer. The reasons are various.